Hey everybody, David McElwain here with an episode of Break Your Golden Handcuffs. I'm really excited to have with me a fellow Denverite today on the show, which is awesome. Vikas Agarwal has joined us today, and he's from Arca Capital Holdings. He has 18 years of corporate finance experience with Fortune 500 companies, as well as with multiple private equity-owned middle market companies. He recently left corporate America and now runs Arca Capital Holdings, which focuses primarily on medical properties. Welcome to the show. Glad you're here.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me here. Glad to be here.
Thank you. And you know, I ask everybody the same first question, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to know the answer to this one. Have you ever had golden handcuffs?
Many times, I would say. So as you pointed out, I recently left my corporate job, and I was working as a VP of finance for a large PE fund company. So I think corporate world likes to keep its talent very comfortable. They pay you well, but then they expect you to work 12 hours, 14 hours. So you're comfortable, you get some of your dreams fulfilled, but at the same time, you feel like it's a handcuff. It's a golden, but it's a handcuff. So that's always there, you know, like they just pay you enough so you stay there as long as they want you to be there. So that's there. But in my life journey, it's not the only time. There are many, many instances where I would say, yeah, that's a very familiar feeling, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And you kind of have this desire, or I should talk in the first person. I always had a desire to break free. And sometimes they were silver handcuffs, sometimes they were gold, sometimes they were zip ties, but they still kind of held me in place. Right. And I always love talking to people that have recently left corporate America because they seem to find this new awakening, if that's the right word for it, that there's a world outside of 60-hour, 500 emails a week world.
Oh, yeah. I remember a few years ago, I was out for a week from Friday to Sunday, so 9 days. Mm-hmm. And I made a promise to myself that I'm not going to check my work emails. So I came back after 9 days, and Sunday night, I made a mistake of checking my emails. I had 296 emails, and more than 50 of them were urgent. Like, you know, you can tag an Outlook urgent, more than 50 mm-hmm. urgent. I'm like, I should have not checked my email. Monday morning, you deal with it. But now it's too late. I checked them, and now I want to reply to them. And I went to bed like 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So
yeah,
that's, I think, in a way, I like your concept that you like to talk to those who have quit their W-2 job recently, you know. It's like newly converted. You know, we are newly converted people. We have recently attained the enlightenment. We have recently moved over to the other side. And I think this experience is going to be very relatable for a lot of your listeners. And it should resonate with any of our story. Like, the challenges are same, but we all have our own path to solve it. But the challenges are 90% the same.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, I think it's fascinating. I don't think that entrepreneurship is for everybody, or even active real estate investing is for everybody, or leaving corporate America is always good for everybody. We all have our own strengths, our own interests. I will tell you that I actually probably work harder now than I did in corporate America. Right. And it's definitely different. I got to take my stepdaughter out today for coffee at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Right. And we had a wonderful conversation. Were I in corporate America, that would not be happening.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Like, as you said, like, I remember, like, I was in finance, right? So finance people do one budget every year. Generally, it's from August, September, October. Sometimes it goes all the way to December. And then mm-hmm. two or three times forecast during the year. And during the budget season, we generally work 60, 70 hours, sometimes 2-3 weeks in a row without a day off, even on the weekend. But I remember actually back in Minneapolis. So I used to live in Minneapolis for 10 years. One day I was on Saturday, it was like 10 p.m. I got done with my work. And then I went online to look for properties to buy. And my wife is like, you've been working all day long. It's 10 p.m. And now you're looking for properties. What's up? And I said, doing this doesn't feel like work, actually. So last 10 hours I was working. I was working on a budget. But now I'm just looking for good properties to buy. And this doesn't feel like work.
So it becomes flow almost, right? You get into flow.
And I'm hoping to find a good property so I can go to bed happy that I have to follow up with the seller tomorrow that you're selling, I want to buy. And that's when I realized, as you said, we work harder. We're probably putting in a lot more hours than we did in the corporate world. But the stress level is lower because we want to do this, not because the board meeting is in 3 weeks. So we have to get the budget done. So it's a very different
thing. I think that's such an important part. Yeah. What you said, and I want to dig into this. We work harder because we want to do this and not because of somebody else's agenda. I remember Donald Rumsfeld, when he was running the first Persian Gulf War, Secretary of Defense, said that if you're working in your inbox, you're working on somebody else's priorities.
Right.
And as an entrepreneur, it sounds like what you're saying to me is, I will work more because they're my priorities.
Exactly. I think this is a very good direction we are going into, because if I push it another step, and I don't know if I'm going in the right direction, but if you have the freedom to choose what you want to do, then it's not a stress. This is your passion, right? But if somebody else decides it, then it's a stress. So if I take a liberty to call it free versus something else, if you are free, then you can work 14 hours, but you don't feel stressed. You're excited. Next day, you want to work again 12 hours, 14 hours. But if somebody else is choosing it for you, then 8 hours feels really long sometimes.
Yeah, you know, that's fascinating because I view that as agency. When I have agency over what my work product is, where I'm going to go with it, and I can dictate what my decision-making thoughts are, what my time frames are, I'm energized. You know, there's a phrase that where attention goes, energy flows, and where energy flows, things grow. And what you're talking about is that the attention that you want to go towards your work allows your work to grow when you're happy.
Right. Absolutely. Very well said.
Yeah. I love that. So tell me, you've got a pretty interesting professional experience in Fortune 500 and medical companies. Give me a little bit about the medical industry that you were in and some of your background.
Absolutely. So just going a little bit further behind, I came to US in 2003 as a student to do my MBA from University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. I majored in finance and strategy. And after that, I worked for Fortune 500 companies as a management trainee. I worked mostly in finance, but I had a few roles in sales and supply chain as well. And then I worked for a very large healthcare company based out of California for many years. So that's when I gained a lot of experience about the medical industry, how the medical practices work, which medical properties are going to be successful, and which practices are going to struggle. What are the differences? What makes a practice successful versus the other? What role the doctors play, the providers play, the office staff play? So all these knowledge came to me in those 4 or 5 years. And I was responsible for almost 1,000 practices in 29 states to make sure they stay profitable. And if they are not, what we need to do. So that's where I gained a lot of medical industry experience, and also for what it means for the real estate We owned those, many of those properties we owned, many of them were leased. So that's my background in finance, but how it relates to real estate and medical properties. But even after I left that job, my interest continued. Then I worked for a very large company, it's Fortune 50 company, manufacturing company, again in medical industry. So it just, you know, Steve Jobs said, it's very hard to connect dots looking forward. You can only connect dots looking backwards. So now I'm here. I love medical properties. I invest in them. I'm always looking for them. But when I look back, I wasn't choosing my next employer with this thought process that I want to gain experience in medical industry. It just happened that one after another company that I joined, they were medical industries. So that's how I gained my experience. And I think this is such a fascinating industry. One of the largest industries in US. The demand for this industry is going to grow. We all know baby boomer is aging. And that is the largest population segment in US. The millennials, Generation Z, my generation, which is before millennials, Generation X, we all are smaller segments, but baby boomer is the largest segment. So this industry is going to grow. It's going to be there. And investing in medical properties, personally, I think is the right move to do for next at least 30, 40 years.
Well, tell me, there's a lot of different thoughts on medical properties, right? Some people think it's not very sexy and it's boring. Some people think it's going to get outsourced and it's going to be gobbled up by consolidation. Tell me what data points and what things drive your statement that medical is where you need to be for the 30 or 40 years. I totally get the baby boomer silver tsunami. That is massive. My parents are in their 80s. Every conversation is around what the doctor's appointments are for the week.
Right.
I love you, mom and dad, but I don't really want to hear every doctor's appointment. So what other data points have informed your decision-making on this?
Right. So first thing that we can talk about is outsourcing, right? This is very valid concern that a lot of parts of medical industry can get outsourced. When I look back, if you think about IT outsourcing, it actually started in late 70s. And it really picked up in 80s, and then 90s was the decade when outsourcing was the buzzword. And still it continues to happen. But the same thing started coming up about medical industry and some of the patients going to low-cost countries for getting their medical health, all these things. But it never picked up. And it even if it happened, it happened in a very specific segment of medical industry. For example, heart surgery, it's $250,000, $300,000 procedure. And in some countries, you can get it for $100,000, let's say. So there is a little bit of flow, I think less than 5% to these things. But if I want to get every 6 months my teeth cleaned from a hygienist or from a dentist, I'm not going to go to Mexico or India to get my teeth clean. I need someone.
Unless you live in San Diego, right?
That is true. Actually, I was talking to somebody last night. So they were into supply chain and manufacturing. So that did come up. There's an economic zone in Mexico and US. So that's very true in manufacturing, actually.
Right.
So medical.
Sorry to interrupt, but you're saying that you're not going to travel for an oral hygiene cleaning.
Right. So like urgent care, your dentist, your pediatric, your podiatric, your daily medical needs, which are not a major surgery, cannot be outsourced because it just doesn't make sense. The sense of urgency is there, right? I want to see a doctor because I've been coughing from last 2 days. I need an urgent care. I need a regular checkup. So within industry, if you are talking about very expensive procedures, there is some level of outsourcing, but the daily medical industry, it's hard to outsource that because there's this time factor is there. So that's one thing about the outsourcing. The second thing is the long-term prospects beyond baby boomers. I think if you look at the population tree of US, generally it goes like this, right? So baby boomer is the biggest segment. Now then comes the Generation X, which is my generation, then millennials. I think the need for better medical services is growing because the population is also, how do I say it in a better word? There is a saying, right? This is the longest living generation. The generation mm-hmm. which is coming after us is going to have a shorter lifespan, actually, for whatever the reasons. We have reached 80, 82 years of lifespan. The generation coming after us is probably going to have a few years less until unless the medical science comes up with new invention, which very well could happen. But I think
so. What you're saying is that the demographics are going to kind of cap out because medical science has not done the next leap to right. change life expectancy exponentially. Is that what I'm hearing?
That is absolutely true, and you see that with Japan too. Japan has the longest
and somewhat in China, right?
Somewhere, yep. But they have also capped out, and it's not growing further. Like it's not. Some people say every 10 years we are adding 1 or 2 years of lifespan. But data doesn't suggest that. Data doesn't say that. Data is saying mostly 80, 82 years is the max. A country can have an average. Individuals can live 90 easily, but the average of 100 million, 200, 300 million people is generally capping out at 80, 82.
Right. And that's and having that 82 means you could have a 120-year-old and a 40-year-old, right. and you're going to come in at 80.
Right. Absolutely. Right. So yeah, I think.
Okay. So there's that Christmas tree issue. There's demographics. There's Christmas tree. There's a cap in lifespan. What else is informing this decision for you?
I think there's another factor, telemedicine, right? Some people have talked about if telemedicine is going to catch up and that's going to affect the real estate need in medical industry. I think this is a great new initiative, a great trend, actually, telemedicine. We have to see how it pans out. But right now, it's actually increasing the need for additional real estate in the industry, which is very counterintuitive, right? If I'm not going to see a doctor, I'm going to see a doctor on a phone, then why doctor needs more real estate? Why they need an extra room in their practice? And the reason is medical industry is the most guarded and high on secrecy for the right reason. Like when doctor is talking to me, nobody else needs to hear what they are talking to me because it's highly confidential. Mm-hmm. So they need additional room which is soundproof. It has to meet certain requirements, which cannot be done from a general patient room. So they are actually a lot of medical practices are adding additional rooms if they are offering telemedicine and if they are in compliance with the codes and the practices. So in short term to medium term, it's going to actually add more real estate to medical industry. But what happens in long term, we have to wait and watch and see what happens. One option is it may not affect, or other is probably it will put some downward pressure on that. But I think that's long-term, not short-term or medium-term.
And by long-term, what do you think of in the horizon for long-term? Because I've heard so many different definitions. What's your definition, Vikas?
My long-term definition is at least in this industry is 10 plus years. Because in some industry, let's say social media, long-term would be 3 years. 3 years,
right,
in
right.
long, but in medical industry, I would say at least 10 years, 10 plus years would be a long term.
So, you know, a lot of our listeners here have been talking about alternative investing and different ways to invest outside of just the stock market, right? and I think you're the second medical properties guest. So give me a real quick 101 on what is actually happening when you invest in a medical property with someone like yourself.
Absolutely. So my focus, the focus of Arca Capital Holdings, is invest in medical properties, which are core properties and core properties with long-term leases, at least 10 years of lease with the tenant. So just let's take an example. Let's say I buy a property with a dentist in Denver. So one of the criteria for me is to make sure the lease is at least 10 years, 12 years, 15 years with absolute triple M. And the reason for that is, as you said, there is a stocks and bonds. And stocks are a little bit more risky, bonds are safer. But with medical properties, I'm trying to create another investment options for investors where they can get much higher return compared to bonds, but at the comparable risk. Why do I say that? Because let's say if you buy an investment grade corporate bond, it's generally backed by a Fortune 500 company and you get certain return. But if I'm buying a medical property, which is corporate guarantee with a company with $1 billion in revenue, and it's a corporate guarantee, so the risk of that company defaulting is pretty low. But the returns are 15 to 17% IRR, which is almost twice of what you get from a corporate bond. So if somebody invests with us in Arca Capital Holdings, they are basically getting much higher returns than a corporate bond with a comparable risk. So this is a new niche that I'm creating, a new option creating for those who like to invest in bonds because of the low risk. So they can continue to have low risk with medical properties, but get much higher return. So that's the whole goal.
So this is fascinating, right? Because I know when you and I had lunch, we talked about some of this. And your premise is that a bond is basically the most risk-adjusted, safe mechanism there is. Right. There's very little default risk in AAA-rated corporate bonds.
Right.
And what you're saying is there's correspondingly very little risk in these medical buildings because you've got a triple net lease, which means that your revenue's contractually obligated. You have no expenses. You have nothing to do with operating the building. The tenant's responsible for all of that. And then you have a corporate guarantee that eliminates the risk. So what risk point do you as an investor have? If I'm reading a PPM, you got to lay out the risks. So what's in your PPM for risks?
Right. So especially in current times.
A hypothetical PPM. Sorry, hypothetical PPM.
So in the current times, interest rate is a one factor there. Because right now the interest rates are higher. So let's say if I buy a property, I'm paying a higher interest rate. But my underwriting would expect in 18 months or 24 months, the interest rates would come down and then we will refinance and the returns will go up. So that is a risk if in next 18 months or 24 months, the interest rate will come down significantly enough for me to go ahead with the refinancing. Now, last week, the inflation data came out. Inflation did not go down. It actually went up. And we all are curiously waiting to see if in June, we are going to have a rate cut or not, but we'll see. And now Fed still says they are going to have 3 rate cuts this year, which is yet to be seen. So the interest rate is a risk factor. I would definitely point that out. The second risk I would say is even these leases are backed by corporate guarantor with large operations, but it's not zero. Sometimes big companies also fail. Even though in last 10, 15 years, I have not seen a large medical company failing. I've not seen a large private hospital failing or going bankrupt. I've not seen that, but not to say that it will not happen. if it did not happen in 15 years, it doesn't mean it won't happen in the future. I hope not, but it could happen. That's another risk. So there are some market risks. I think some macroeconomics risks are there, some specific to the tenant. But it's not risk zero. It's not U.S. Treasury. It's a real estate investment. So there is risk, but the question is how much risk, the risk tolerance. That's where the trade-off is. Low risk, high return, rather than zero risk. It's low risk.
Right. And my brain's going, not to get political here, but I got to just be a devil's advocate for a second. People say U.S. Treasuries are zero risk. But in 2024, we've had Congress in the fiscal 2023-24 year go through, I think it's 3 or 4 budget shutdowns where we risk defaulting on debt, which right. would make a U.S. Treasury default.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
Even a U.S. Treasury has some risk in it. So I think what you're really laying out is the risk profile feels better in your chair than some other risk profiles.
Absolutely. And a great point. Like there is literally nothing which is risk-free, not even U.S. Treasury.
You don't know what the government's going to do.
Like I like to say, in God we trust, and in U.S. Treasury we trust. But even that's shaking now.
Yes, it is. So we're going on close to half an hour. So I always like to ask my guests a couple questions. Knowing what you know today, what's the best piece of advice you wish you had a decade ago?
Any young person spending 50, 60, 70 hours in their corporate job in W-2, it's great that you're working hard. I congratulate you. I've done that too. David, you have done that too. But start investing now. Don't wait until you have some number in your mind that I will do that when I'm 45, I'm 55 or 60. No. When you are 30, 35, start investing in other asset class. And I may be biased, but real estate is a really good option. U.S. real estate is always going to be there. So 10 years ago, I wish I would have invested more in real estate 10 years ago. So anybody just start investing, put a little bit money aside, go buy some fractional ownership or invest with David or me or anybody, but start investing. Mm-hmm. Job is great, but have a second option too.
Yeah, and I can't echo that enough. If I had invested the money in real estate in my 30s that I put in the stock market today in my hometown, we wouldn't be talking because I would be on the beach already, happy and having hit my FU number. So from the best piece, what's a piece of advice that was really bad that you followed in your career you wish you had ignored?
I come from a very traditional, old school values family, right? And my grandpa, he worked for Indian Railways for 45 years. And he started there, he retired there. My dad worked for Indian Railways for 38 years. He started there, he retired there. So general advice is work hard and you will be rewarded appropriately. I think in corporate world, in US, in American corporate world, it could be true, but don't make it a Bible of your life. It may happen, it may not happen. So give your best, but make sure you have a good plan B and work-life balance. Like if you have family, if you have wife, if you have kids, if you have a husband, like make sure you find enough time. Working hard is a great advice, but come on.
There's more, right?
There's more to it. There's more to life. Yeah. And not always working hard means more rewards. It's not as that simple.
Yeah, I love that. And it's not work hard or work smart. It's work hard and work smart and efficiently.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. So two more questions. Number one, is there a thought or a quote or some sort of axiom that moves you day in and day out you'd love to share with our listeners?
Absolutely. Actually, very quickly, like I came from India. I went to schools and my undergrad in India. I came to US in 2003. This is 24. So 21 years, I have come a long way. But what keeps me going is this quote. We did not come this far to only come this far. We have to keep going. Right? When you are, let's say if you're in Nepal and if you're trying to climb summit, then you get to base camp one, you get to base camp two. But at base camp two, you're thinking, I did not come this far to only come this far. I have to reach the summit. So great hard work in the last 20, 30 years, but just keep going.
I love that. That is outstanding. And as an ex-backpacking guide, I have promised you that I have been at a false summit and said the same thing to myself and my teams that I was leading. Love that. So tell us, what's the best way to contact you if you want to learn more?
Absolutely. Please check out my website, ARKA Capital Holdings. And ARKA is A-R-K-A. So A-R-K-A capitalholdings.com. You will see all the information. You can reach to me via email. My first name, Vikas, V-I-K-A-S, at arkacapitalholdings.com. And you can connect to me on LinkedIn. So if you go to website, you will have all my contact information. But shoot me an email, Vikas, at arkacapitalholdings.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us, Vikas. And you've been listening to another episode of Break Your Golden Handcuffs. If you liked what you heard here today, push that like button, push the follow button, and be notified when we publish. We publish every Monday and Thursday. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, David. Take care.
Thank you.